Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone. This is Stephen McCarthy from The Mental Edge Today, and I am joined by Sean Goodsell. And we are looking forward to another show today in talking about thriving through uncertainty. And I think it is probably one of the most pertinent subjects today because so many people want to control, they want to give away certain things to gain security. And I think sometimes there needs to be a discussion about uncertainty, and that I hope is what's going to happen today. Sean, how about you? What are your thoughts opening up on the idea of living in uncertain times or living through uncertainty?
Well, Stephen, I am so glad that we get to every week join and partner together on this radio show, and I've just been blessed by your involvement with this. And, you know, every time I sit down, I think, what's the topic that I want to cover in our next show? I think about something that has come up in a meeting or a consultation with one of my athletes, or in many cases, it's the stuff that I'm going through in my own life that really requires a higher level of thinking, a higher level of action point in order to thrive versus just survive. So I've been talking with a lot of kids that I work with that are embarking on some pretty significant changes in their life. And in fact, a lot of these kids are young kids. They're 15, 16, 17-year-old kids who are in the process of getting ready to move away from home and spend a whole year in another environment. And so the anxiety level that they have is high, and the anxiety level their parents have is high. And so I thought, you know, today is a time to really dial into this topic of uncertainty and provide the listener with some practical, powerful points of emphasis so that they can not just get through their uncertain times, but truly thrive through these times so that they can live at a level of life, live at a quality of life that is really, powerful. So today's topic is not just something that I want to talk about from an intellectual perspective. I really want to talk about it at a grassroots perspective. And by the time we're done here today, I hope that the listener will say to themselves, wow, I had never thought about managing the uncertain times of my life using those powerful principles. So I'm excited about today, Stephen. Thanks for being with me today, and looking forward to the content that we're going to talk about.
Absolutely. All right, we're going to go to a quick break, and we'll be back to start our discussion about thriving through uncertainty.
Best. You can be the King Kong banging on your chest. You can beat the world, you can beat the war. You can talk to God, go banging on his door. You can throw your hands up, you can beat the clock. Yeah. You can move a mountain, you can break rocks. You can be a master, don't wait for luck. Dedicate yourself and you can find yourself.
Standing in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
And the world.
Streets through hell with a smile. You could be the hero, you could get the gold. Breaking all the records they thought never could be broke. Yeah, do it for your people, do it for your pride. You're never gonna know if you never even try. Do it for your country, do it for your name. Cause there's gonna be a day when you're dead.
And the world's gonna know your name.
Yeah.
politicians, be preachers. Be believers, be leaders. Be astronauts, be champions. Be truth seekers. Be students, be teachers. Be politicians, be preachers. Be believers, be leaders. Be astronauts, be champions.
All right, I'm back. This is Stephen McCarthy. I am with Sean Goodsell, and we are the host and co-host of the Mental Edge Today. And today we are going to be talking about thriving through uncertainty. But before we go into the subject, a couple of cool things have happened at the Mental Edge this week is we have launched the MentalEdgeShop.com. And basically, you'll find all of Sean's coaching products. We have also have some water filtration devices, some footwear, compression stuff, some really cool products that if you stop in and buy, it supports the show and continues to get out the information on how we can change the culture of life and sport. And so please go to the shop. It's MentalEdgeShop.com. All spelled out. And we'll be also highlighting some of the products as we move through the weeks as well. But today is thriving with through uncertainty. And Sean, what are you? I know you kind of shared that that is a should be something to be embraced versus something to be feared. How do you kind of set the lay the foundation to discussing the subject of uncertainty?
Well, the first thing I think about is that the only thing certain about life is that we all are going to experience uncertainty. And we experience uncertainty in different levels of intensity. I mean, you know, not knowing, you know, whether I'm going to run into traffic or not is probably a small form of uncertainty. And for some people, they're dealing with some of the most challenging forms of uncertainty that come through whether or not their health is going to hold, or, you know, sometimes they're wondering if their kids are going to turn out okay. And, you know, we all are in the type of world where there are things we want to be certain about that just don't provide us the level of security and certainty that we're looking for. So for some of us, we have a need to be more in control of our outcomes and things that go on in our lives. And other people's personalities are wired more to deal with, you know, uncertainty because they don't need or thrive on a certain degree of comfort and security. There's nothing wrong with being a person who loves to know what's going to happen. And there's nothing wrong with a person who is more flexible, spontaneous, and is able to roll with the changes a little bit more. But I do believe that to some degree, we all have ways that we have chosen to manage the various uncertain areas in our life. And for some of us, we don't thrive during those times, we just survive. And for some of us, we not only don't survive, but our quality of life is absolutely ruined. And the anxiety levels that we experience are off the map and off the charts, and the level of fear that we live with really can hold us back from experiencing the quality of life that I believe that not only we want to live, but we could live if we had a better way of of thinking about uncertain times and living differently through those times, I think we would find that uncertainty in many cases allows us the opportunity to live vibrantly, to live confidently, and to truly squeeze everything that life has to offer from us. So that's why I'm so excited about this topic, because we all experience it at some level, and most of us don't think intentionally and consciously about how we want to deal with it. We just kind of let ourselves get taken away in whatever defense mechanisms or strategies that we've used to manage it, and we really don't know how we want to deal with it, and therefore we become a victim to our own uncertainty.
You know, it's interesting because over the weekend I was reading a book about a school teacher in New York City his name is, I believe, John Taylor Gatto. That's his name. Anyways, and he is talking about how he is taking kids from a position of basically being thrown out and just willy-nilly going through life to making them into A students. And one of the things he talks about is that the system of thought that we're being told or being taught in school doesn't allow for creativity. It doesn't allow for uncertainty. Everything needs to be a science. Everything needs to be a yes or a no. And kids are not even put in an environment where they actually feel comfortable. You know what I mean? Does that make sense?
Yeah, well, you know, whatever environment we're in, there's a certain framework that the human spirit was designed to thrive within. And when the human spirit isn't within a thriving framework, one of the frameworks of thriving is a degree or a certain degree of urgency or a degree of not pressure, but a sense of importance. And it's kind of like it's up to me. If I don't contribute, then something isn't right. And we're living now in an environment where our kids we do more to make them comfortable than we do to make them mature. We do more to make our kids, you know, experience less problems. Therefore, we basically are growing a generation of mentally weak young people because the framework we're putting them in, whether it's in the educational system and sometimes in their sports environments and sometimes even in our home environments, the environments are actually producing less mature, self-defined, self-assured, confident young people and more of the exact opposite of that.
And it's interesting because that is at even a level that I don't think people really take into account. They're just assuming that that's just the way that I am. You know what I mean? When in reality, you have in a part ways been taught these things and these boxes that we're putting people ourselves in are caused by external forces that we don't know or we're not aware of.
Well, if as a society, I mean, we did a study on what we hear. So in other words, most of the information that we use to shape how we think about things either comes through the media, it either comes from culture, but how many people truly test the theories that they live loyal to on a daily basis to determine whether those theories are actually truth? And you know, in education, we've been taught that information is what is powerful. Knowledge or the ability to understand science or the ability to understand, you know, certain genres of study, we've bought into those as being the ticket to success. And one of the things that I think we don't realize is there are no tickets to success. The ticket to success is my ability to translate who I am into a lifestyle that I love to live in. And knowledge and information and networking and those types of things are all means to an end, but they still rely on me. And when you think about what level of personal development do we challenge our young people with, or what level of personal development, for that matter, do most adults challenge themselves with, we begin to realize that part of the reason our society is struggling in different ways is generally because we have a lot of people who have jumped off the personal development bandwagon and are just floating through life wishing and hoping that they win the lottery.
It's true. I mean, you think about it, it's almost like an arrested development. It's like they're in a position where their brain is active, but nothing's going on.
And part of that is seen in that how people navigate in times of uncertainty. Usually what people are trying to do in times of uncertainty is control the outcome. And
yes,
whenever a person tries to control the outcome, they actually are engaging in the least powerful form of action. Because I can't control any outcomes. I can influence outcomes. I can do things to try to, you know, put things in motion that raise the probability of an outcome. But I can't control by myself any outcome. And therefore, I end up putting my point of focus into areas that I don't have control over, and then I wonder why I feel like a victim and why I feel unempowered and feel incapable of dealing with life well, when most of my energy is in going into areas I can't control. You know, and it's a
and
lot
I,
has to
give
do
you,
with even...
I'm going to give this as a perfect example. I'm sorry to interrupt you, but... This is a revelation for me this week. I have been born and raised as a cold call salesperson. That's who I was in my career. And so many times people ask, well, how many calls are you making? And then that will then dictate how many customers you get. So you make this number of calls, you're going to get 10 clients. And we set this artificial number to say, okay, we're going to get 10 clients a day. When in reality, what you just told me is that if you just do the work, the clients will come naturally. You can't control the outcome.
Right.
So you should just go ahead and do your work with the full and purpose of succeeding.
Right. As soon as you put a number on the outcome, you have done something to cage yourself. What if your work, if you did it well, could get 20? You know, if you set a goal as 10, most people stop after they reach their goal because their focus is on the outcome and not on their efforts. And
yes.
Relationally speaking, that is true as well. Most of us parents, we go into our relationship with our kids with fear because eventually we get to a point where we can't control how our kids live. And we are afraid they're going to start living in reckless ways that leads to, you know, the types of decisions that are dangerous. And so, therefore, we become so overly controlling to protect our kids from themselves that we forget to grow our kids so that we don't have to protect our kids from themselves.
It's true. I mean, you think about just driving. You know, when you send your son or daughter out to drive for the first time, you know, once they get in the car, you know, they're on their own and you can't do anything about that. You could sit there and try, but even if some of the things of control, well, I can text them all the time isn't going to solve the problem other than get yourself into a position where you're thinking you're in control when you're really not.
And, you know, this is a touchy subject because there have been people that have lost kids to reckless decisions. And there's been parents that have done really, really effective parenting jobs and their kids have still chosen to make decisions that are less than optimal and even in some cases dangerous. But that doesn't mean that the answer is to be more controlling. Even though there are people that have done horrendous things with their lives. That doesn't prove that we need to be more controlling. That means that there are facts of life that are uncertain. One fact of life is people at some point in time in their life make choices as to how they live. And no matter what I do or say, there are some situations where that person is not going to make any changes in their life, and that doesn't mean that I'm not effective, and that doesn't mean that being more controlling is the answer. That means that that is one of those aspects of life that in some ways is like a mystery. And we have a very difficult time in our society embracing mystery and understanding that there are just some things that we don't understand. And as much as I want to give people formulas and answers to how to make sure their lives all turn out exactly the way they want to, one of the premises of managing uncertainty is that there are certain mysteries of life that we don't understand. And the response to not understanding a mystery isn't to become more controlling. It's to embrace the amazing mysteries of life and try to live comfortably or try to live within the concept of mystery without going absolutely crazy in the process.
That's some heavy stuff. Right there. I think that...
Yeah, I know.
Yeah. Because when you get down to it, in today's, you know, neighborhoods and cities, they are very much interested in answering all the questions. And they are not interested in a position of mystery or a position of faith. That's weak, or that's... there's got to be an answer. There is a right or wrong. There is a do or don't. You know what I mean? That kind of thing. And we've gotten so far down that path where we've lost sight of that sometimes in life something happens that you can't explain.
Exactly. And that's why, you know, whether you buy into this or not, people that have struggled with and managed addiction in their life through alcoholism or some other form of addiction, you realize very quickly that surrendering to things you are powerless against is actually the greatest form of power in your life. It's trying to control things you can't control that actually makes you sick. So people that struggle with, you know, various levels of addiction understand that they are strongest when they are giving things up, surrendering their powerlessness over certain things. That's when they actually receive power. And I think there's some wisdom for all of us as people who are living in different times of uncertainty, that sometimes the greatest strength that we can exhibit, the greatest form of power, is actually the capacity to surrender and say, I'm powerless in this situation. And that's what I meant by dealing with the mysteries of life, is that me getting more controlling and me getting more answer-oriented doesn't give me any more insight into a mystery. It actually makes me less powerful in the domain of that particular mystery.
All right, we're going to leave people with that, because you got to really take this in to really get to the, I mean, that is good, heavy-duty stuff right there. We're going to go to a quick break, and we'll be back to continue our discussion around uncertainty.
Best. You can be the King Kong banging on your chest. You can beat the world. You can beat the war. You can talk to God, go banging on his door. You can throw your hands up. You can beat the clock. Yeah. You can move a mountain. You can break rocks. You can be a master. Don't wait for luck. Yeah.
dedicate yourself and you go find yourself.
Standing in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
And the world's gonna know your name.
Yeah.
Cause you fell with the cross of fame.
Yeah.
And the world's gonna know your name.
Yeah.
And you'll be on the walls of the Hall of Fame.
You can go the distance, you can run the mile. You can walk straight through hell with a smile. You could be the hero, you could get the gold. Breaking all the records if I never could be broke.
Yeah, do it for your people, do it for your pride.
You're never gonna know if you never even try. Do it for your country, do it for your name. Cause there's gonna be a day when you're
dead.
Good morning, everyone. This is Stephen McCarthy, and I am with Sean Goodsell, and we have been talking about uncertainty and thriving during such times. And I can honestly say that that was a fantastic 15 minutes, Sean, because I think people, if they realize that the more they try to control, the more they go into powerlessness, or they go into a position where they have no power, even though they think they have control, is that it's an illusion. And then if they would actually just surrender to it, amazing, amazing stuff. Because I have the first question is, why did you choose the subject of uncertainty? Because nobody wants to talk about it.
Well, part of the reason I chose it is because I had a breakthrough for myself this week around this topic, because I've been reflecting, I've been playing with different ideas, and the breakthrough that I came up with was so powerful, I just thought I have to share this with people that, you know, are listening to our show. Because number one, 90% of the clients that I'm coaching right now are struggling with and are trying to effectively and powerfully deal with the uncertainty in their life. That's a factor. Another factor is my family is dealing with some of our own uncertainty. We're engaging, you know, in a big life change for our family, and we're trying to navigate through some of our own uncertainty, and we're trying to not only do it as parents, but we're trying to help our kids go through it. So that's another reason. And the third reason is that, you know, part of my life was changed when I was 16 years old, very unhappy in my life, feeling very powerless in the way that I was living. And part of the reason I was feeling powerless is because I didn't have any friends, and I was depressed and sad and feeling really powerless to change that in my life. And had I known what I'm going to coach people to do today, I think I would have been different. I would have had a capacity to live life within the context of that uncertainty differently if somebody would have coached me and how I want to talk to the listeners today. And, you know, during that time when I was 16 years old, I had a very profound faith experience. And the faith experience led me to understanding that there are certain things in life that require faith and require the capacity to trust. And to me, trusting and faith are consistent with managing uncertainty in areas that I couldn't control. And I found a great deal of intrinsic power when I realized that there was a bigger, you know, there's a bigger story going on in the world than just my little story every day. And I realized that my needs and my wants weren't insignificant, but there was a larger story unfolding that was more concerned about my growth than my happiness. And so I have a great deal of connection to this concept for many, many reasons, which is also what drives my passion for it. And I want listeners to literally be transformed with the information. And my challenge today is to be able to communicate it in such a clear, actionable way that people literally who are in uncertain times now can literally in a moment's notice make a shift in how they choose to go about this, to move from a point of being unempowered in uncertainty to being empowered and growing through their uncertainty and thriving in it. So that's part of why, you know, this topic is so valuable and important to me today.
Well, and I think it's timely as well, is that, you know, with a lot of things that are going on in the United States and in the economy and in the social fabric of our lives, so much is being changed to the point where we become uncertain just by being in the United States or being in our neighborhood today. And if you are not able to have a philosophy of life that allows you to thrive in these times, then you will be in a position where you're going to fail, or like you say, be in a position where you're not happy.
The goal of life, in my opinion, you know, when I really boil down the goal of my life, you know, part of why I talk about this idea of showing up, the goal of my life is to live powerfully. I mean, if you think about that concept, I'm going to live powerfully. And the concept of power has many different tangents to it, or many different variables that increase the quality or level of power that I live with. And if I can live powerfully in my life, it's almost like a blade that cuts through uncertainty. Because when people get uncertain, they stop living powerfully. They start living tentatively. They start living fearfully. They start living in a certain manner that actually, quite frankly, generates the very outcomes that they're afraid of. And so if we today, if I can touch one listener, if I can touch one person to rethink their strategy when they are in uncertain times, to help them live powerfully through uncertain times, then I will feel like this time spent on this show was worthwhile. Because I know that where there is power, where a person lives powerfully, there is outcome, there is legacy, there is purpose, there is deep confidence, there is success, there is performance. And most of the time when we talk about living powerfully, most people think of living intimidating or living dictatorial or living in manners that are not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about a powerful life that's based on certain principles that the world actually has to respond to, as opposed to, you know, just waiting around waiting for things to happen for people.
And then when they don't happen, get frustrated.
Get frustrated and lose their confidence and lose their perspective and lose their hope and lose their optimism. You know, this is what almost in some ways proves our cultural mental weakness, is that as soon as we don't get what we want, we start to doubt. As soon as we don't have things go our way, we start to, you know, get confused. Now, as soon as, you know, as soon as my kids don't get to have their sleepover, I'm a terrible parent. You know, as soon as a coach doesn't let me have my playing time, then I must either be a lousy athlete or the coach must be a lousy coach. And we're almost stymied by the most smallest of obstacles. And we need to understand that obstacles are not our problem. You know, obstacles and adversity isn't our problem. It's that we don't have a more powerful response to those obstacles and to adversity that is our problem. Everybody has adversity. Everybody has obstacles. Why is it that some people seem to thrive in the midst of adversity and obstacles and other people fall apart? It's not an accident. It's not like my fate in life that, oh, well, I guess I wasn't meant to succeed because I ran into this obstacle, you know? So that's what I mean by powerful living, the capacity to live in a powerful fashion, pursuing the things that give us joy, and leaving no stone unturned when it comes to accomplishing the things that we want to accomplish.
But that would be diametrically opposite of what most people are doing.
Well, it certainly is, and I don't want to generalize this, but part of it's because there's almost a haze over our society. And the haze is the haze of mediocrity. The haze is the haze of passivity. And all you have to do is watch TV, listen to the news, and you'll realize why we're living in a haze of mediocrity, because the economy's falling apart and, you know, people are unfair and our government is hurting us and, you know, those things may be true, but really all they are is noise. And, you know, our kids live in a kind of a mediocre society, to the point of where we don't believe anymore that we have, you know, high achieving people. And part of why I wanted to have a friend of mine come on our show today is I want people to understand that there are people that are living life at young ages and they are crushing it. And they are pursuing with passion their dreams. And they are taking uncertainty and they're taking it by the neck and they're looking at it and saying, you will not dominate me. And I want people to see, and in some ways I want the listener who is passively sitting around waiting for the government to make things right or waiting for, you know, some entity to make things right, I want them to be embarrassed when they see what some of our young people and some of the people in our society are doing, because those are the very same things that we should be doing as leaders and as coaches and as parents to help our culture and to help our young people live at higher levels.
You know, you bring up the whole world of that haze, you know, and like a mediocrity, because what a lot of times happens, even with somebody that is crushing it, the little things are what those others, we'll just name them as others, hold people back with. Well, why don't you just think like me? Well, why don't you just do this with me? You know, talk to us a little bit about that association piece on how it is that you're attached to the haze.
Well, you know, there's great consequence to challenging norms in life. You know, people generally like being comfortable. They like, you know, they like ritual and routine that doesn't put them too much in a state of discomfort. And so if you're a person who is is speaking truth or speaking against a cultural norm, then you're going to either be targeted or you're going to be hallowed or followed. And there really isn't too much middle ground when it comes to this. But changing cultural norms is difficult. You have to be courageous. You have to be bold. You have to be willing to endure some resistance, sometimes a lot of resistance. But what's at stake here is the quality of life for a whole generation. What's at stake is the quality of life for our world in many ways. And
because I'll give you a little example, and I think it's a very small example, and it doesn't sort of meet the litmus test of what we're discussing, but it's an example of it, is that in the shows we've talked a lot about, you know, eating different food and eating GMO and non-GMO and all this kind of stuff. But our family made a decision to buy the brand of chips that are non-GMO, if you will, if there is such a thing.
Yeah.
But my daughter went to school one day and was eating the chips, you know, in a bag, you know, like a little Ziploc bag like everybody else. And she literally was ridiculed because she was eating different chips. And that is an example of what you're saying, is that these people are over there in the others trying to hold you back, saying, don't do that. That's wrong. Come over and get these other chips. And they're holding people back from what's right and wrong when people know what's right and wrong just because they're doing it.
Well, and a lot of people don't care what's right or wrong. They just don't want to be uncomfortable. I mean, I was talking with a friend of mine yesterday, and he has made a dramatic change in his diet and nutrition, and he's lost probably 45, 50 pounds and kept it off for over 5 years, and he's now passionate about helping people reorient their lives around better nutrition. And we were talking yesterday, and he said he's going to write a book, and he's going to come out with some podcasts, and I said, that's great, but I said, I think there's one aspect of change that most people don't think about. If information was the only variable to change, we would have plenty of change going on in our society. But it's communal. It's doing it with one or two or three or five or 20 or 100 other people. It's having support. It's having accountability. It's building relationships where the cultural norms change, where significant growth has happened in large numbers of people. There are lots of people who change, you know, one person at a time. You know, there's one person here, there's one person there, there's a person over here. But creating an epidemic of change is about a visionary leader who says, it can be better than it is, and I will not rest until I have reached a culture. You know, Martin Luther King was one of those people. You think about different leaders in our society that have sparked epidemic change, and that's what happens when people start relating differently together. That's what happens when people hold different expectations together, and that's what happens when a band of courageous leaders gets together for a quality change. That's what happens when we do those kinds of things, and that's quite frankly why we're doing this radio show. Is how many people can we snare in our missional, you know, strategy so that we can create change in not just a couple of athletes or a couple of kids or a couple of families, but how can we create change in an entire culture? And that's you know, that's where in my mind the big money is, if you will, is creating cultural change.
Absolutely. All right, we're going to go to a quick break. We'll be back with Alex on the other side to discuss about how to actually apply these things to life, and that it is possible. It is not a, I don't know what the word I'm looking for, but it possible to apply these things, not just be defeated. We'll be right back.
the greatest. You can be the best. You can be the King Kong banging on your chest. You can beat the world. You can beat the war. You can stop the guy go banging on his door. You can throw your hands up. You can beat the clock. Yeah. You can move a mountain. You can break rocks. You can be a master. Don't wait for luck. Dedicate yourself and you can find yourself.
Standing in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
And the world.
Straight through hell with a smile. You could be the hero, get the gold. Breaking all the records they thought never could be broke.
Yeah, do it for your people, do it for your pride. You're never gonna know if you never even try. Do it for your country, do it for your name. Cause there's gonna be a day when you're dead.
Sean Goodsell with the Mental Edge today, and I'm here with Stephen McCarthy, and we are joined by a special guest here this morning. His name is Alex, and I've had the true honor, and I really mean it's been a true honor, to work with Alex for over a year now, and I think that you guys are going to love hearing from this young man. I know that every time I sit down to meet with him, I show up with an expectation of something truly remarkable to happen. And for over a year, Alex and I have been on a journey together. I've been fortunate to be a coach in his life, and I've been fortunate to be a part of a journey that he's gone through over the last year and some change. And so I wanted to let the listeners be a part of this journey because I think there's plenty for us to learn about how do you deal with and manage uncertainty, especially when you have a dream that you are pursuing. So, Alex, thank you for being with us this morning. I sure appreciate you taking the time to be on the show today.
Yeah, thank you for having me. I'm really excited.
So, Alex, just let's start by helping the listener get to know you a little bit. When you think about where you were at, you know, when we first started working together, how would you describe your life and where you were at that time?
I was, at that point, the whole goal and direction of my life is I had a goal of getting accepted to the United States Military Academy, also known as West Point. And at that time, it was the summer between my junior and senior year, and I had just started opening my application for West Point. And at that point, I had been working and doing tons of things to try and improve myself to get to that point where I am, you could say, acceptable for West Point. And during that time, when we first met, it was a time of in change in me of the different person that I had to be, the different things I had to do to try and accomplish my goal. And at that time, when we first met and started meeting after that, that just accelerated my change and growing up basically by 100 miles an hour. And it's been that way ever since. And everything in my life for this past year has basically been trying to accomplish my goal and dream and better my life and myself as a person.
So, Alex, would you say that your goal revealed in you the changes you needed to make in order to become the kind of person you needed to be in order to reach your goal?
Oh, I'm 100% positive of that. I often, many, many, many times, think that I don't believe I would be anywhere near the same person I am today if it wasn't for my goal of West Point. I don't know what I would be doing right now or even who I would be. I have absolutely no clue or idea about that, because I know the whole goal of West Point pushed me, because at that point when I wanted to go to West Point, I was nowhere near where I needed to be if I wanted a chance to make it to West Point. And I knew I had to make some changes in my life, everything from just my academics to who I was as a person and my morals and what I believe in and stood up for. And definitely the goal of West Point pushed me to change almost everything about who I am, but all for the better and improvement in order to accomplish the goal of attending West Point. It definitely, I mean, I would not be the same person without that goal.
So at the time that you set the goal, you realized that the person that you were at that point, if you stayed that person, you had really no chance of reaching your goal.
No, it was the goal of West Point. That was all it was a goal. At that point of where I was at, it wasn't even a possibility, really. And that's why I had to make some drastic changes and improvements in order to make that a possibility.
So when you...
Can I interject one thing, Sean?
Yeah, sure,
just
absolutely.
Just one thing, okay? Could you... Alex, give us a little bit of an idea of the types of things or a little bit more of a situation of what you were, why wasn't it attainable? What did you have not the quality grades? Did you get in trouble? Were you, what were the kind of the situation when you started?
At that point, West Point and the other service academies are very, you know, here's one of the examples is they're very strong academically, and that is one area simple enough that I had to drastically improve and change and things such as the ACT. And also other things I had to change was what they look for in an applicant is a person that's, it goes 60% academics, 30% leadership qualities, and 10%, you know, physical qualities and, like, athleticism and things like that. And I also had to improve, you know, I wasn't a leader. I had no leadership experience. I didn't know what it meant to be a leader. And I was kind of afraid, you know, I didn't like that type of spotlight, and I had to change that. I had to, you know, somehow at that point make myself want to be a leader, want to be a guy to others. And I had to find ways to improve that, because if I'm going to West Point and I become an officer in the Army, that's what my life is going to be, is leading people. And that's an area I had to change as well. And also, like you're saying about getting in trouble, I wasn't getting in trouble by any means. But West Point, if, like, I had one speeding ticket for going 75 and a 65, and they required me to put that on my application, know everything about that. So there's nothing that goes unchecked by them. But at that time, the friends I had grown with and been close with, I could see that they were going on a path that could get them in trouble potentially, and thus getting me in trouble. And simply one mistake could simply just cut off my dream of West Point. And I had to make a couple changes and also like who I associate myself with, who I spend my time with, because I didn't want to let someone else's mistake bring me down with them, causing me to lose my dream. So there were many different areas, from grades to friends to trying to become a leader and change who I am to try and make that impossibility of getting to West Point at that point a real possibility.
Cool.
It's a great question, Stephen. And, you know,
yeah.
Alex, you know, the thing that I want that's important for me, for you to tell the listeners, what happened last summer around this time of the year that really looked one way when you first experienced it, but it actually ended up being a completely different way. Do you remember what I'm referring to?
Yeah, the time where we met outside.
Yeah, what happened? Tell the listeners what happened and how that has turned out.
Yeah, at this point last year, it had been from January to July, in a sense, of the application process of getting into West Point. And one night, you know, basically at that point, I was feeling very confident. I saw myself improving in all these different ways. I was feeling confident that I would reach the point of where I needed to be in order to make it to West Point. And in a sense, I may have had, you know, a little bit too much confidence, or felt, you know, like a little bit of no doubt in myself because I was feeling very good. But then I remember one night, you know, I never had really any, say, dreams, SM messages or so clear like this, but I had one dream one night that, you know, I always thought about, you know, picture myself before I go to bed thinking, you know, what's it going to be like if I get that envelope in the mail and I open it up and it says, congratulations, you're accepted to West Point. But then I had this dream one night that I had that exact moment where I got an envelope in the mail from West Point. I opened it up and it was a rejection letter. That's all my dream was. And it was clear, it was as if it was real life. And that just instantly scared me, that because of the way I felt when I opened that letter in my dream, that started making me second-guess myself. I started questioning if I can really do this, because I wasn't at that point yet. I was improving, but I really wasn't there yet, and I had a long ways to go. And I started doubting myself and having some uncertainty of that if I can do it or if this is what I'm supposed to do. I didn't know if this was a message from God telling me to do something else or go on a different path, if this is not meant for me, because at that point I knew that was all I ever wanted to do, and I knew that was my goal and dream, and that's all I ever wanted to do with my life. And that really caused some fear and doubt and uncertainty within myself once I had that dream.
So what did you do with that? I mean, obviously, it's now this summer, and we're on the radio show together. How did you navigate that?
Well, I remember we were sitting outside meeting, and when we met, I brought it up to you, and I brought it up in tears of what was going through my mind and what, you know, all this, these emotions that were inside me. I had all this, I felt this strength the day before, all this confidence, and now I felt like it was all crushed and taken away. I remember talking with you, and this is exactly, you know, what has gotten me this far, is you helped change my mindset and my perspective and the way I look at things and situations, and you helped me realize that, you know, that's just it's just a dream, first of all. You know, a dream doesn't mean anything. I mean, you can dream what you fear, you know, no matter what it is. That's why you have nightmares, but that was my nightmare. And you helped me realize that that's all it was just a dream, that I can, you know, if I feel this uncertainty right now, you know, what am I going to do to give myself certainty? I mean, it was still a year away before, you know, I would leave for West Point, or about a year before I'd ever received that envelope, and how much time I have and opportunity that I have to change that uncertainty into certainty. That is this, but the one thing that really, really stuck out to me, you told me that, is this a test? He told me that this was a test of my strength and my ability to deal with setbacks and move forward. Because at a school like West Point, where it's a military school, where I have a million things going on at once with the hard academics, how am I going to deal with a setback or something that's, you know, giving me a little bit of uncertainty or worry in my mind? What am I going to do to keep moving forward and moving strong? And this was a way to practice and train for that, that this was a setback or a worry in my mind of what's going on, that if I can do this, and that I should train myself and practice myself to be able to take this negative and turn it into a positive and move forward and add it to a list of strengths that I can continue to add on as I move forward throughout, you know, my life, throughout West Point and even beyond that.
I remember having that conversation, and I remember how special of a moment it was for, and this is why I brought this particular moment up, Alex, is because I don't think there's any more powerful moment in the life of a person trying to pursue a dream is when that dream gets tested and the possibility of it not happening becomes part of the equation. How a person responds in the moment of doubt or a moment of uncertainty about something they dream usually is representative of the power or the quality of the dream. And for you, you know, we had a conversation, and I saw you reinvent your approach to your application process after you had worked through the doubt and the uncertainty that emerged through that dream. I saw mm-hmm. you actually kick it into a whole new level of preparation that I think is actually significant to where you're at today.
Yeah.
Do you agree with that?
Yeah. Yes, definitely. I mean, you know, it's funny how the term, you know, or the saying, you know, it doesn't kill you, makes you stronger. Well, literally many times in my life and experience throughout this goal and dream and this journey that I've been on these past 2 years, that has never been more true. I mean, in every situation, like I said, you take that negative, that test, and or that weakness, and you turn that into a strength and add it to your list of strengths, and you continue to move forward. I mean, that is 100% true. And if I did not have those tests or those moments of uncertainty, I would not be to the level of where I'm at right now by any means.
So let's fast forward a little bit, and I know that you and I have had many, many, many conversations. We certainly aren't going to be able to get into what comes out of every conversation, but you know, mm-hmm. I think one of the things I'm very proud of related to you is that you've been very conscious and mindful about the way you've done your process. And if you had 3 or 4 tips that you wanted to lay out for somebody that was pursuing a dream that currently seemed unattainable, either because they don't know how it's going to happen or you know, maybe they're not the kind of person yet that qualifies to accomplish that dream, what tips would you mm-hmm. have for people pursuing something, you know, like your pursuit of getting into West Point?
Yeah, like you said, you know, the first one is someone pursuing a goal or dream that seems, in a sense, unattainable or very, very difficult or slim of happening. You know, what I did, the first thing that I would do every time over is I looked at why is it unattainable or very difficult? Where are you lacking that needs to be improved in order to make it attainable? Because the first thing, I just looked at everything that I didn't have that West Point required, and I went right away to improving those qualities and making my weaknesses into strengths. That would definitely be the first thing that I would do with any goal. And the second thing is that I find very important is find a foundation or something that, you know, a person that can help pick you back up or be there for you or go with you. It's hard to go through these goals or dreams or journeys all alone. It's very difficult. And like when I had my uncertainty and dream last year, you were there to help redirect me and pick me back up and point in the direction that I should head. That, you know, if I didn't have you as my foundation for this, I, at that point, I may have given up on my dream and wouldn't be here, obviously, today, and don't know where I would be. So I believe a foundation, whether it's a, you know, people or a person, you know, find something that can help pick you back up or guide you or just be there with you through the process. And another point would be trials and tests are going to be a part of your goal and dream, you know, throughout the whole process. There's going to be a lot of points where you think it's lost, you know, or it's about to be, or it's about done, but that's the goal and dream is, it's never, you can never, if it's really your goal and dream, you won't give up on it until you have it. That, you know, if I didn't get into West Point, you know, if I didn't get an acceptance letter, I wouldn't have just, okay, well, there was my shot, I give up. I would have applied the year after that, and year after that, and year after that, until I got that acceptance letter. With every goal, I believe, even like through movies and, you know, just those inspirational sports movies, even, you know, someone's chasing a goal and dream, there's, you know, there's always setbacks or moments where it seems like it's lost, but try and take every difficulty and turn it into a strength and an asset you can use to further, you know, defeat any other future problems or trials you may face. And a fourth point, let me think about this one. A fourth point.
Well, Alex, let me ask you a question real quick.
Yep.
You got a fourth point?
Yeah, I do. And it's,
all right, go for it.
Probably the most important one that, you know, I think, and don't know why I just thought about it now, but in order to make, you know, a goal and dream that seems very difficult, achievable, you simply have to have the heart, the desire, the motivation, the desire. I wouldn't have gotten the opportunity to go to West Point by just, you know, hoping and dreaming. I had to act. I had to do something about it. I had to change and act and create, make it a possibility. And I did that through many difficult situations of doing new things, but I did it all with because I had the desire that I wanted nothing more, that I had the heart, that it's all that I had ever wanted, and the motivation that I, after everything accomplished, you know, what's the next thing for me to do? What's the next thing to improve myself? How can I get better? It's all about, it's not a dream unless, you know, a dream stays a dream unless you have the heart and you turn it into reality. I turned West Point into reality because once it was a dream and an impossibility, that I felt like maybe one day, you know, I might achieve it, but it seemed very slim. But with the motivation and the desire and the heart I had, I did all the things I possibly could do to turn it into a reality. And with each little thing I accomplished each day, I came closer and closer and closer until I finally reached my goal because I had the heart.
And Alex, what drove your motivation? Why did you want to go to West Point? What's your purpose in wanting to pursue such an ambitious goal and work so hard and go through so much turmoil? What drove that energy for you?
Well, it was all about I learned more about why throughout the process. Initially, right at the very beginning, basically, the short of it is, my Korean War veteran neighbor across the street talked to me one day after school, asked me what I want to do with my life, and I never knew at that point, and eventually we talked, and I somehow mentioned the military, but I really never knew what I wanted to do, and he brought up West Point, and I looked at West Point online that night, and instantly that night, I told my parents, I remember in their bathroom, that I want to go to a military school, and that's where it all started over this one conversation and one night. That's where the dream started. And at that point, I didn't necessarily know why I wanted to go to West Point or why that was my goal and dream, but I knew it was. I knew that's all I wanted to do. And throughout the process, of trying to accomplish my goal, I learned more and more about why. I learned that before I was afraid of being a leader, of having that spotlight, I was nervous. But through my experiences where I've had many different leadership positions, I've learned that I absolutely love leading. I love being a leader. I love people following me and looking to me for guidance or wisdom or anything. And that's one thing I learned. I learned that, you know, as weird as it sounds, I don't like easy. You know, I like difficulty. I love difficult situations because, again, throughout the process, all those difficult experiences that I had experienced, I had grown. I saw myself change. I learned that the harder the challenge, the more you'll grow. I wouldn't have changed if I tried to take an easy way. And going to a place like a school like West Point and being a officer in the military afterwards, those are by far not easy whatsoever. Those are very difficult experiences, and those are very great opportunities for me to continue to grow and change and improve in my eyes, become a better man than I can see. The goal, my reason for wanting to go to West Point at first was all it was I just knew I did, but I didn't know why. But now I know I want to be in a place where I can lead, where I can grow, but at the same time, the people that I am leading will continue to grow as well by seeing me and leading by example of how to grow as a person and face adversity, you know, confidently. I know that I want to lead, you know, men and women in the military, and I know that's what I want to do because I want to grow and help others grow and succeed in a difficult environment. That's why I wanted to go to West Point.
Well, Alex, I want to – Stephen, you got any questions for Alex? Because if you don't, I have one follow-up.
I actually do have just one – just give us a frame of reference, because as a person that's not pursued a goal like this, you keep talking about the application process. Well, in a normal school scenario, you mm-hmm. send your transcript, you send your ACT, and then they tell you whether you're in or out. But you're talking about yep. it as a way that you're showing leadership. What were the requirements of how did you develop it? I guess that's just more of a, like a frame of reference question.
How did I develop my leadership skills?
Well, is it...
No,
like
I think
go ahead.
I think what he's asking, Alex, is just talk about some of the things you've had to do in the application process and how those might be different from, like, a normal college process.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, like I said, West Point doesn't... Or, sorry, not even just West Point, but all the service academies and any actually military college doesn't just look at academics, where they do strongly emphasize that, but they, you know, a leader in the military can't just be smart. They have to be a leader and a good one, and they look for leadership qualities and also, you know, the ability to, say, be in the military, this falls 10%, you know, athleticism, so on, at least be athletically fit. But throughout the application process, they require many different things. You know, I do send in my transcripts and my ACT. I also have, you know, you have to receive a nomination from your congressman or woman or your senators. And you have to go through a whole, basically another college application. It's the same thing. You have to write for the nomination, three different essays. You have to have an interview at their office. And you need to have a resume and your transcript and your ACTs, all for those three different nominations you apply for, with the numerous essays you apply for, you write for West Point and all that stuff, and you have interviews with people called field force officers, and you just have all these different things. And on the application, they have different areas. Like, for example, you know, it says specifically, you know, were you a Boy State delegate? You know, that's a program over the summer that is really emphasizing leadership qualities. Were you an Eagle Scout? Were you this or that? As I looked through the whole application, you know, the first time through, I was none of those things. And that's when I knew I had to change. I had to, you know, there's a big section, you know, describe your leadership qualities and your leadership experiences. Again, at that point, I had absolutely nothing to put down for that. And I had to find ways to improve myself, as a leader, in all those different ways, even in academics. You know, I took the ACT four times and the SAT once to get a score that I was comfortable with. You know, some people can take it once and then that's, you know, above and beyond what they need. But I started from the bottom and I had to climb my way up slowly. And I did, you know, I took the ACT many times. I took many practice courses and tests, and I seeked out every single leadership possibility that I could. And the application process is just so, it starts from January of your junior year to about February of your senior year. And I was always doing something. No matter what, I had something to do. You have to take a physical test called the Candidate Fitness Assessment that I had to train for months, because it's a very difficult, fitness test. You have to take a medical exam. I mean, there's essay after essay, interview after interview. And then with that, though, because I had to add on everything, I also had to gain new leadership experience. I had to become a Boise State delegate. I had to do all those things because I already wasn't. So I had even more stuff to accomplish and check off than most people probably had to. And that application process is the same for everyone. And even at the other military schools, they went through the same thing that I did. And that's the people who make it to those schools, they don't want to be anywhere else. That wasn't their second choice. You know, that these schools are their first choice, because no one would ever go through that whole process, that long, difficult process, if it was just their second pick. But everyone wants to be there because that's all they've ever wanted to do. And I've met some people who are on the same path as me going to West Point as well, and I've never met people as similar to me as these people.
Hey, Alex, just give the listeners real quickly the numbers. How many people apply and how many get in?
From the start of the application process, the people who, there's different cuts as if it's like a tryout. You know, there's the initial application where it's open January of your junior year. There's about 20,000 people who will open the application. Then into about the summer after that, you know, 7 months later, there's another cut of people. You know, if they can see these people really don't have a possibility of getting in, they make another cut. But then to that point, when people apply for nominations, from those initial 20,000 about who send in an application, after that, people who receive, you need a nomination in order to be accepted to the academy. That's absolutely required by everyone. About 4,000 people out of those 20,000 initially will receive a nomination. And from those 4,000 who receive nominations, about 1,000 will receive appointments. So basically, it's 1,000 out of the initial, one out of every 20 people who open the application will receive an appointment.
So tell the listeners, Alex, I'm sure they're wondering, okay, what happened? It's the summer now, you've graduated from high school, and you've gone through this amazing life-transforming process, and now, what happened? Where are you at?
Well, I have signed a contract with West Point. I am not attending West Point this following year. I'm doing a program. Basically, I was accepted, but I was nominated by Michelle Bachman. She's my district congresswoman. And she is allowed to have 5 people at the academy at any given time. That could be one person 1 year, one person another, 2 and one, and then another one. So in a sense, she can send one person there a year. And this year it was full, so I didn't have the opportunity to go. But West Point saw my application, and they saw that I was good enough that they wanted me to go. It's just this rule that I couldn't because it was full. So what they did is they gave me what's called a West Point Preparatory Scholarship Program. It's basically where they pay and send me to another military school for the following academic year, this year. And then once that spot opens up, as long as, you know, I get good grades at this school and I don't fail out, you know, I will go to West Point the following year after that. So this coming year, I'm leaving in a couple weeks. I'm going to the Marion Military Institute in Alabama with 22 other people, or around 22 other people, who are in the same program as me, going to Marion and then West Point the year after. many faced with the same situation. You know, West Point has a prep school, and I'm sure people who know something about West Point maybe have heard of that. Well, the prep school is a little bit different, where it's these people didn't get in because they just weren't, they were just barely not academically there yet, but the school felt like they had potential, but they weren't there yet. But this program is, we as preparatory scholarship students, you know, we have been recognized that, you know, we have what it takes to make it at West Point, but, you know, for various reasons, we aren't able to go the following year, so we have to basically, you know, study and, in a sense, practice for a year at another military school, and then the following year go to West Point.
Well, Alex,
congratulations.
My money's on you, my friend. Yeah, my money is on you, and it always has been, it always will be. If you're listening to this, I want you to know that there's no finer young man in our society than Alex. And Alex, it's been truly an honor to walk through this experience with you. And you've made me a better man. You've made me a better coach. And most importantly is you've challenged me to live up into my dreams and to not think small but to think big. And so for that, I truly, truly appreciate you. And you know that I'll be with you through the whole experience. But thank you for taking the time to be a part of our show today. Thank you for sharing your story. And you never know, listener, you may see Alex on the other end of this at some point down the road. So, Alex, thank you so much. Your information is priceless, most importantly, because it's wise and it's born out of your own dream and experience. So best to you, my friend, and blessings on your journey.
And I want to thank you for having me, but also that I went to accomplish my goal and dream, and I would have given up at this point last July if you weren't there, you know, to help pick me back up and guide me through this experience and give me mental strength and confidence and the right mindset and perspective in order to accomplish my goal and dream. Because any goal and dream is not an easy one. You need the right and strong mindset in order to accomplish it, and you gave me those tools to succeed. So thank you.
My pleasure, my friend. Best of luck to you the next couple weeks as you do your final preparations, and I know you and I will see each other tomorrow in our regular coaching time. And thanks again.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks for having
thank
me.
Thank you, Alex.
Thank you.
All right. Steven, let's go to a break, and then we'll come back on the other end, and we will lay out some practical principles for how people can live up into their dream and manage and thrive through uncertainty.
Absolutely.
Best. You can be the King Kong banging on your chest. You can beat the world. You can beat the war. You can talk to God, go banging on his door. You can throw your hands up. You can beat the clock. Yeah. You can move a mountain. You can break rocks. You can be a master. Don't wait for luck. Dedicate yourself and you can find yourself.
Standing in the hall of fame.
Yeah.
And the world.
Straight through hell with a smile. You could be the hero, you could get the gold. Breaking all the records you thought never could be broke.
Yeah, do it for your people, do it for your pride. Never gonna know, never even try. Do it for your country, do it for your name. Cause there's gonna be a day when you're dead.
And the world's gonna know your name.
politicians, be preachers, be believers, be leaders, be astronauts, be champions.
Hello, everybody. This is Stephen McCarthy, and I am with Sean Goodsell, and we are just got off an interview with Alex, and Sean, thank you for bringing him on. I think this time need more people like Alex that are willing to pursue something that does seem mathematically impossible. I mean, you think about it, 20,000 applicants to 1,000 actually get to be accepted, and then only if there's room, you know what I mean, type of a scenario. I think that goes to show you that the numbers really don't make a difference in the end.
Well, I think what I take from Alex's interview, Stephen, is that the accomplishment of Alex's story isn't that he got in and is going to go to West Point. That would be the seductive thing to say was the treasure, if you will. In my mind, the treasure is that he dared to pursue something, and he dared to become a better man. And in becoming a better man, he actually secured his future more than just going to West Point. And the one thing that I see with a lot of people I coach is they think the accomplishment of the goal is the treasure. And I truly believe that there are lots of people pursuing goals who come up a little short, or whose situations change and they have to change their goal. And it's unfortunate when I see a person who's pursuing an ambitious goal who comes in second, or who, you know, doesn't get exactly what they wanted, and they think that they failed. The best reason to pursue a great goal is the treasure of the process of growth that you go through in the process of pursuing an ambitious goal. And, when I met Alex last year, not only Alex has always been a great kid, but the maturing, the growth, the ambition, the drive, the attention to detail, the confidence, all of the things he talked about that he had to develop were true attributes he had to develop. He's not sugarcoating it. He actually did need to develop those things. And rather than sitting and waiting around or thinking to himself that he couldn't do it, he just started getting after it. And he took one thing at a time and got after it, took another thing at a time and got after it. Before he knew it, he had really become and emerged into the kind of man that is capable of being a West Point, you know, person. And that's why I wanted our listeners to hear him, because he didn't get exactly what he wanted. He didn't get acceptance this year. That's what he wanted. But he stuck with it enough. He stuck with the process enough to stay in the ballgame, to stay in the mix. And that's why I will put my money on Alex every day of the week, because I know he's not going to give up. It was my pleasure actually to ask him to come. He couldn't have waited to come and share his story. So I'm glad that he got a chance to do so. And next week we're gonna keep having guests like this who are pursuing their dreams and who are representing the concepts that we're trying to teach. And as you can tell with Alex, there was a lot of uncertainty along the way. There was very few moments where he really had certainty that was based in any kind of truth. So, So I'm ready to transition. Well, how about you, my friend?
Pardon me?
No, I'm ready to – what were you going to say? And then let's transition to some actual principles and concepts.
Yes. Why? I just think that he has proven that if it was just about where you're currently at, what you have or what you don't have, then you don't even try. Where he moved up into the creative, imaginative ability to think for yourself and develop the characteristics that were inside of him to accomplish his goal. And you see the progression, how he did it. So now I'm going to ask the question back. What are the things that he did that allowed him to develop beyond this normal haze of people, mediocrity, that allowed him to accomplish his goal? Or in the process of accomplishing his goal?
Well, the first thing he did is he got clear about what he wanted. There was no lack of clarity about what he was looking for. He knew what he wanted, and there was no doubt what he wanted. And the more that he dove into the process, the clearer he got. So we've talked about clarity on this show many, many times. And his clarity combined with his passion for what he wanted has absolutely driven him through the whole process. That was the first thing. The second thing is I think there was a moment in time where he realized that it was up to him, that he could sit and wait for, you know, things to happen, or he could go make things happen. And I think he was very clear after he was clear about what he wanted, he was clear about what he needed to do, and he realized that the burden of responsibility was with him. And, you know, I like to say, remember, it's up to you. And he never through this process has he thought it's about anybody else or it relied on anybody else. He knew it was up to him. And then one of the things I talked about with Alex many, many times is be careful about projection. And what I mean by that is there are different signals and signs that occur in a process that are easy to read into. For instance, when he didn't get a letter alongside of when most people were getting letters, he started to get afraid and he started to go into the dumps and he started to start projecting negativity or pessimism. And he lost about a week of his life to this because he projected too much. And I remember sitting across the table from him one day and I said, Alex, I know this is going to be hard for you to grasp, but you don't know exactly what's going on right now. Until you know for sure, you don't know at all. And I think a lot of people, when they face moments of uncertainty, they start projecting how things are going to go based on certain things that they see. And very often, they end up projecting themselves right out of their own motivation. And so Alex had to manage and make sure that he wasn't negatively projecting around certain cues and things that occurred. And then the last thing, and Stephen, this is my motto, my new motto, if you will, for life, and that is you got to leverage your greatness. None of us achieve and move through our lives by focusing on our weaknesses. I believe that every one of us has an aptitude to be great in one or many areas. And if we would just quit focusing and obsessing and excusing and whatever our weaknesses, I think we would be much better off. And so what Alex did is he leveraged his emerging and his current greatness. And he decided to live courageously. You know, he decided to, you know, get himself into an environment. He let go of certain friends and he re-engaged with other friends. He came to me and every time he needed something, he asked. And we met every single week for the most part through a whole year. And there was never a time where he didn't come with a question. He always had a notebook in front of him. He was always willing to learn. And most importantly, he was always willing to try an idea or solution I had for him. There was never one time where I gave him an assignment that he didn't come back with it completed. And so those are the kinds of things that Alex did. Those are the kinds of things that I think the listener needs to, you know, hang on to when they're moving towards an ambitious goal or moving towards something that's uncertain in their life. And those are kind of the principles that I believe are significant to navigating through uncertainty.
Well, I just think that the one that you make reference to is what our society is based on, is always focusing on our weaknesses. And we talked about that in my particular situation as well, is that we get so focused on thinking that we're making a mistake that we obsess upon the mistake to fix it. You know, we're trying to fix problems, fix this, fix that, fix this. And all it does is burn your energy into zero, and you won't have any energy to actually succeed.
Yeah, and this is an important point that, you know, if I had 5 minutes with a listener, that I would want them to quit being distracted, dial themselves into what I'm saying, and reflect on it for the rest of the day. This is the concept. So this is like the poignant moment in today's show where I want the listener to pay attention. And that is this. When we are faced and we are engaged in situations where we're not sure of the outcome, where we're not sure of how things are going to go, we're not sure about whether we're going to get what we want, oftentimes the response is to start worrying, start generating anxiety and fear, and we start projecting the worst possible outcome, and we start engaging in all sorts of mind games that actually end up messing us up more than empowering us. The response that I would love to challenge and encourage the listener to consider is the greatest form of power in a moment or in moments of uncertainty is a fully self-expressed person. So what I mean by that is when I, like, for instance, our family is going to, you know, take our lives and we're going to move to North Carolina. And 2 years ago, I would have been worried about, well, can I develop friendships? Am I going to be able to grow and establish my business? Am I going to have any clients? Am I going to, and I would start focusing on all sorts of fears and all sorts of worries about what's going to happen to me. You know, is it going to work? Are my kids going to be okay? All these questions that lead me to all sorts of things that I can't answer right now. But what I am sure of is that if I show up, that's why I titled this thing Show Up. If I show up with the best of me, the best energy I can summon, the best heart of generosity, kindness, and servanthood that I can muster, if I can muster a presence and an engagement, and if I can muster a strategy, and if I can muster courage, if I can be my best, and I can focus on what it means to be my best, the greatest form of power in the face of uncertainty is me showing up my best. When I look at my daughter who's going to move to a brand new school, start high school in a brand new location, try out for a brand new volleyball team, the greatest advice that I can give her about minimizing the uncertainty is, Grace, show up. Show up with a great, kind, generous, energetic, engaged heart. Be open to other people. Be coachable by your coaches. Be courageous in your expression of who you are. If I can coach her to be that way, what I've coached her to do is to minimize the negative possibilities and maximize the positive possibilities. And if the listener will take uncertainty and take it into their own hands by choosing to be there, to be at their best, to show up day in and day out their best, the possibility or the probability of good things, positive things happening is, in my mind, what takes uncertainty and makes it something fear-based, and takes uncertainty and makes it a position of power for the individual going through that situation. Does that make sense, Stephen?
Absolutely. And what do you think about it? I mean, I think that would be a great conclusion, because I think you've tied it all together in the sense that your outlook, your focus, and your clarity all is going one direction, that you can accomplish your goals if you stay focused, or you're on the path to accomplishing your goals. And I would concur 100% in my experiences. I don't have the knowledge that you do, but I'm saying in my experiences, when you think back in your life when things were going well, it's because you were on a laser position on a particular thing. And then when things are not going well is when you were scatterbrained, you were busy, you had too much going on, and it just wasn't happening for you. So I would concur 100% with you. So what do you think, Sean? Are we... anything else that you want to kind of lay on top of this conversation about uncertainty?
I would say that the probability and possibility of me generating the outcomes that I seek in my life are directly correlated to my ability to show up in my best and be my best self day after day. And if I control, if I choose to control me being my best, there's no better place to exhibit control, whether it's me sitting down and having a conversation with my kids. I need to show up and be my best. I need to be the best listener. I need to be the best communicator. I need to be attentive to their individual needs. If I do that, then I'm going to decrease the probability of problems with my kids. If I, as a coach, if I show up attentive, empathetic, engaged, aware, energetic, enthusiastic, if I show up that way, then I have a better chance of helping my clients achieve their greatness. If as a husband I show up attentive to my wife's needs, capable of hearing and listening to the things she says and she doesn't say, and if I courageously express myself and my thoughts and feelings to her, I reduce the probability that my wife will be disappointed. I can't control that, but I reduce the probability. In business, if I do the things that I know are correlated to success and I choose to be my best day in and day out, even though the people around me may not be their best, but I choose to be my best, then I know that I increase the probability of my business being vibrant, dynamic, and successful. So the answer to uncertainty is me at my best. It's not controlling somebody else. It's not trying to control the situation. It's me penetrating the environment with my best self. And if we had a culture of people that held themselves accountable, not to be in, you know, not to a certain test score or not, but to just showing up every day being their best, I think that we could literally transform and create an epidemic of excellence and greatness in our society. So that's my summary, Stephen. Now you can see why I had such passion around this subject matter.
Amazing, because I know that there's a lot more discussion, and I know this is going to be a kind of a cliche segue, but there is a whole, I mean, what we discussed today has so many different tentacles into life. And if you want more information, you can get a hold of us at mentaledgetoday.com. We do appreciate your support of our new shop or our new retail store or online or internet website, whatever you want to call it, thementaledgeshop.com. Please just come take a look at our stuff. If you have any questions, get a hold of Sean at sean@mentaledgenow.com. Or you can get a hold of us at 612-741-0982. Thank you, everybody, for listening. We look back to or look forward to our next week's show and continue our discussion of how to transform our life one step at a time.
to be the greatest. You can be the best. You can be the King Kong banging on your chest. You can beat the world. You can beat the war. You can talk to God, go banging on his door. You can throw your hands up. You can beat the clock. You can move a mountain. You can break rocks. You can be a master. Don't wait for luck. Dedicate yourself and you go by yourself.
Standing in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
And the world.
Straight through hell with a smile. You could be the hero, you could get the gold. Breaking all the records they thought never could be broke.
Yeah, do it for your people, do it for your pride. You're never gonna know, never even try. Do it for your country, do it for your name. Cause there's gonna be a day when you're
standing in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
And the world.
Be believers, be leaders, be astronauts, be champions.